This is Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia, and my co-host, Dr. Danielle Scherer of the Medical University of South Carolina, is on the line. In screening for cognitive impairment or dementia in the primary care setting, current guidelines are neutral because they find no compelling evidence either to screen or not to. This week, the Journal of the American Geriatrics Society publishes research that should help inform the next set of guidelines. Investigators offered a simple 3-minute screen to some 8,000 veterans over age 70 at their usual routine primary care visits. Of those who accepted, about 1/4 failed and were offered further testing. Before screening, none had signs of cognitive impairment or dementia. When all was said and done, about 11% of that population were diagnosed with cognitive impairment or dementia. That's in stark contrast to the roughly 4% found through usual care in other VA clinics. Our guest is J. Riley McCartan, the lead author. Dr. McCartan does research at the Minneapolis VA healthcare system in the Geriatrics Research, Education, and Clinical Center there. He's also an associate professor in the Department of Neurology at the University of Minnesota. Thank you for joining us, Dr. McCartan.
Thank you for inviting me.
Did I summarize the findings accurately? 11% is a high rate of case findings. Did it surprise you?
I don't think it did surprise us, and I think actually it would be significantly higher than that if we pursued it even more aggressively. This was a demonstration model in which our main objective was to see could we actually introduce screening, further evaluation, and some assistance in care coordination into primary care, specifically aimed at dementia. And the answer was yes. 97% of the veterans approached agreed to be screened, and even though there was a lot of reluctance on the part of the primary care clinics to have this program introduced, after it had been there for a year, there was it was well accepted, and not just well accepted. I think over 80% of the providers thought that it was a definite help to them.
And your group used what we call the mini-COG for the screening process, which, again, is relatively short, easy to use. Is this a currently widely used screening instrument?
I think it is becoming more widely used, but yes, I think it's a widely used instrument. It's been around for, it was introduced in 2000, but within the past year or so, certainly in the, where I work, in the Twin Cities area, there are at least a couple of other major providers in addition to the VA that use it. We worked with the author of the mini-COG. I think her experience is that it's being used much more widely.
And tell us a little bit more about the threshold you use to derive a positive screen.
Part of our effort was to identify people as early as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so the published data on the mini-COG to their maximum sensitivity and specificity, it's a 5-point test. So you ask someone to remember 3 words, they draw a clock, they get 2 points if they draw the clock correctly, and you ask them to recall the 3 words, and they get 1 point for each word recalled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the score is 0 to 5, and a score of 2 or less is highly correlated with dementia.
Mm-hmm.
We had our cutoff at 3 or less because we wanted to identify, we wanted to increase our sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
So that was our reasoning. And in fact, now, again, this was a demonstration project. We did not compel people to have the further evaluation. People were self-selected. But of those that were self-selected, 75% had dementia. So they did a pretty good job at self-selecting, and even the people that scored 3 over 5, over 70% of those had dementia, and at all the fail scores, 0, 1, 2, and 3, there were less than 8% actually appeared to have no significant cognitive impairment.
No issues. And there was also this interesting bucket of people who actually passed the screen, but despite that, requested further evaluation. Tell us a little bit more about that small group and what you found.
Well, that was a surprise to us, that people passed the screen and they said, I may have passed, but I'm concerned about my memory. I'd uh-huh. like to have a further evaluation. And by and large, they were correct. 70% of those people ended up with a diagnosis of dementia, and about another, I think it was 17 or 18%, were diagnosed even a little bit higher with cognitive impairment that did not meet criteria for dementia. So we call it cognitive impairment, not demented. And our threshold was, is this something that we think is important for other providers to know about? You know, is this something that we should enter into a problem list because their impairment is such that it could interfere with their care? So that was our threshold. Sometimes, you know, technically they did not meet the DSM-IV criteria for dementia, but they did meet, or they did struggle enough on cognitive testing that we thought it was important to record.
And can you elaborate a little bit more when you say potentially interfere with their care? Are you referring to things like medication compliance? Or?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's medication compliance. It's understanding their disease.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that's important, and providers may know this, but the vast majority of demented people look normal in the clinic. And, you know, they will give you a history that may or may not be accurate, but they often will report that they take their meds exactly as directed, and you can give them advice, and they'll say that they're going to follow it, but they don't have the ability.
In this demonstration study, you used either nurses or advanced practice nurses to do the screening, but you think this is feasible in the primary care setting?
Oh, it absolutely is. And actually, when we developed the program, we had every intention of having a medical assistant do the screen because it's a simple screen. And And what happened was the primary care clinic said, you're not using our staff. And so we had the nurses, who were actually much more skilled, they were advanced practice nurses, administer the screen. The advantage turned out to be that we got very rigorously collected data, and we did this across 7 medical centers, and the fail rates were the same, and the data looked the same across 7 very different sites. And I think part of that was because we had these more skilled people collecting the data initially.
Yeah, and you mentioned that that screen that they perform is essentially taking a 6th vital sign.
Certainly that is what we would like. And, in fact, when Dr. Sue Borson first published on this, she suggested it as a cognitive vital sign.
Mm-hmm. Now, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force guidelines, as I mentioned in the introduction, they don't recommend routine screening, but you do in the conclusion of your paper. And can you explain a bit the advantages of routine screening in older people? Because I think one of the fears is that if you tell people that they may be developing some dementia, that's bad news and there may be adverse consequences. But you seem to point out that there are some good consequences as well.
Well, let me first address the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force. They were primarily addressing the issue of whether or not identifying people and starting them on the known medications, the cholinesterase inhibitors for Alzheimer's disease, is that a good thing to do? And they came out with the idea that the data is insufficient. Now, the task force recognized that there are other reasons that you may want to diagnose people with dementia. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of providers look at this and say, well, it's untreatable. If your concept of treatment is it's got to be a pill or a procedure, it may be untreatable. If your concept of treatment means you're going to intervene in a way that's going to make that person more safe and improve their health care and improve the quality of life for them and their families, there's a lot that can be done. And so, the medications, the finances, the driving, the social interactions, all of that can be addressed if people know there's a problem. If the problem is unknown, then, that typically gets ignored. What I tell families and other providers, actually, is you may choose to ignore the symptoms of dementia, but they will get your attention sooner or later, and it's usually not in a very nice way.
That's very good advice to pass on to other providers, too.
My bias is this, and I've been thinking about this a lot. You know, I think that the brain is an important organ. I think everybody would agree with that. And cognitive function is a very important biological function. And the healthcare system should make that part of what they evaluate. And particularly, and I've seen this recently on various news programs, screening students who are in contact sports is now becoming pretty routine. In fact, recently here in the Twin Cities, they offered free screening for anybody 8 to 18 who played in sports. And they had a half-hour computer screen because if the child had a concussion, then they'd be able to compare it to this baseline. Yeah. If we can do that in students who have a relatively low risk of brain injury, well, let's look at a population of people who have a very high risk of a serious disease. We really should be screening them.
I think it is important for our audience just to reemphasize one of the points, which is to sort of steer our mindset away from thinking that the only point of screening is to figure out who needs medication, because it should affect so many other aspects of the care of the patient if you know what their cognitive function is. Just like you said, it's just like we assess their cardiovascular function, we assess their kidney function, we do all these things. We screen for peripheral artery disease, but we don't really think about screening for level of cognitive function, and it really does affect everything else we do during that visit and support we provide for them for every other system in their body.
I would also just comment, since I work in memory clinics, a couple of different memory clinics, a main reason that people are referred or asked to be referred is because their doctors may know that they have Alzheimer's disease and they may have told them, but it's pretty much here's a pill, good luck. And I see a lot of people because they've been unhappy with the medical care provided.
Okay. Well, thanks for spending some time with us today, Dr. McCartan.
Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome.
That was our 146th edition. And all earlier ones can be found at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from Journal Watch, whose website is jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Dr. Danielle Scherer and I thank you for listening.